some sort of love in my life. You dig me?
You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, Campus and Community Radio here in Winnipeg.
Hello, I'm Tyson Odson. This is number 0855, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0855. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Mark Leslie is back on the show talking about his new book called Haunted Hamilton. He'll share stories like the Tombstone Ghost, a haunting that took place for over a decade.
This woman wakes up in the middle of the night. She wakes up and sees this ghost with these deep sunken eyes and this long straggly hair, just the upper half of her body. And it looks like she's screaming and she's floating over her just a few feet above her on the bed. And then the woman screams and then the ghost takes off to this one corner of the room. And that keeps happening. And it's so freaky that they end up bringing in paranormal specialists from the U.S. and exorcists and all kinds of like mediums and things like that. And they couldn't figure out what it was. And then 10 years later, they found a piece of tombstone in the building when they were collapsing it to build something else on that site.
Also back on the show is Brian Glow. We had him on the show a while ago talking about his anti-bullying advocacy, and we didn't get a chance to talk about his career as an international illusionist and comedy magician. So we'll do that this time.
I used to do very serious big illusions. It was pyrotechnics and explosions and fire and fog. As I was doing all this big theatrical magic, the best parts of the show were sometimes the smallest, funniest, and not the most amazing thing where I'm getting burned 30 feet in midair and reappearing at the back of an audience in an arena on a motorcycle. Whereas that was amazing and fabulous, the reactions for me doing something humorous were just as big and fit in my pocket.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter starts 2026 with a look at the final days of Marilyn Monroe, courtesy of James Patterson. So say goodbye to Norma Jean later on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news, dad joke theater, morning shower thoughts, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0855, was Tyson Hodgson, who is a video editor and an all-around nice guy. Thank you very much, Tyson, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. Joe Hayden, a fourth-generation dairy farmer supplying milk for Bailey's Irish Cream, uses the Herd Plus app to find perfect mates for his 230 cows. The Tinder for Cows technology, developed by the Irish Cattle Breeding Federation, matches animals based on ancestry, weight, fertility, and milk production data. Well, that could sound suspiciously like some of the low-rent human dating apps. Said Hayden, like every other industry, technology is transforming dairy farming. We use this app, which matches each cow with the right bull so that we can breed even better ones in the future. His family farm in Tinahili County, Wicklow, has supplied Diageo since Bailey's launched in 1974. Hayden breeds only his top 80 cows yearly using artificial insemination. I wonder if that involves Bailey's too.
Bailey's.
Let your senses guide you.
Speaking of cows, Missouri authorities summoned cowboys on December the 10th after a collision between two tractor trailers on Interstate 70 in Oak Grove released 13 cattle onto the highway. The Missouri Highway Patrol confirmed the crash caused the bovines to escape from one truck, prompting officials to contact B&W Land and Cattle from Butler for assistance.
Keep moving, 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 though they're disapproving. Keep them doggies moving, Roy. Don't try to understand them, just rope them through.
Cowboy Colby Booz explained the challenge, saying, "We like to help out the ones in need. It's always a challenge because you never know where they're at or how they're going to be or if they're going to be mad and want to fight you. You don't know." The crew successfully captured all escaped cattle. Both truck drivers escaped injury in the incident. Good to hear. This could have been an utter catastrophe.
Move 'em on, hit 'em up, move 'em on, hit 'em up, rawhide. Cut 'em out, ride 'em in, cut 'em out, ride 'em in, rawhide.
A juvenile took a joyride to Santa's Land on Boxing Day in Putney, Vermont. State police say the kid took their family car and tried to drive to the small amusement park in southern Vermont. No one was hurt and no one will face charges. Police did not reveal any more details because of the suspect's age. I'm guessing he definitely made one of Santa's two lists.
He's on the naughty list.
No!
A United Airlines flight from Dallas, Texas to Chicago, Illinois was diverted to St. Louis, Missouri because of a bomb threat. A passenger claimed there was an explosive device on the aircraft. Specifically, he allegedly said a bomb was in his wife's luggage. Sniffer dogs in St. Louis swept the plane and found no bombs. The flight was allowed to continue to Chicago, minus the passenger who'd allegedly made the threat, who was arrested. So, there was no bomb. But I'm going out on a limb to say that this marriage has already crashed and burned. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Erica Rothenbuehler was charged with felony theft after taking six children's toys worth $48 from under a Christmas tree at a St. Petersburg Red Roof Inn on Christmas morning. Whoa, you're a mean one, Mrs. Grinch.
You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel.
Hotel security footage shows the 44-year-old entered the lobby and began looking under the tree before taking the presents and leaving. Police later found Rothenbuehler, who made spontaneous statements saying that she thought the gifts were for the kids in the building, according to the arrest report. Officers noted she doesn't have any children. The theft charge was elevated from misdemeanor to felony due to Rothenbuehler's previous convictions for stealing from a Winn-Dixie supermarket and Wawa convenience store. She remains in county jail on $5,000 bond and faces up to 5 years in prison if convicted of the third-degree felony. Well, if she gets jail time, I don't think her heart is going to grow any bigger.
Your heart's an empty hole.
And let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Mark Leslie is back on the show. We had him on 5 years ago when he talked about his novel Fear and Longing in Los Angeles. That was on show number 0605. This time around, he's here to talk about his latest book, a nonfiction title called Haunted Hamilton. Mark joins us from Waterloo, Ontario, via Riverside.com. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Peter. Great to be back. Oh, my God. It's been that long, has it?
Yes, it has. And I thank you for being back on the program with us. Now, the last time we talked about a book of yours, it was a fiction, a novel. But this is a nonfiction story, and it's not the first foray for you into the paranormal world.
No. I for some reason, I found myself fascinated by the darkness, whether it was fiction I made up or whether I was doing research. So it's kind of like one of the three or four different hats that Mark Leslie wears as a writer of the macabre.
So what led you to not only Haunted Hamilton, but other things that you have done in the paranormal world before?
So I grew up afraid of the dark. I grew up afraid of the monster under my bed, the one in my closet, all of those things. And when I first moved to Hamilton, Ontario, one of the things I did to try to get to know the city, which is a place where my wife at the time was from, I went on ghost walks, because I find going on a local historic ghost walk is a great way to get to know the city. And I was so fascinated with the ghost walks of places like Ottawa and Hamilton and various cities that I've traveled to, that I thought, being a book nerd, a reader, and of course a writer, I thought, wouldn't it be great to have a book of this? So I mentioned that to the folks who were running Haunted Hamilton at the time, and now it's two separate walking groups. But I said, you got some great stories here. You should consider doing a book. And they said, well, we're too busy running the tours, but if you want to write a book, we'll give you access to our files. And the light bulb went off in my head. I work in the book industry. I also happen to know of a publisher that was interested in such a book. And I went, aha, all the stars are aligned. And that's how it all started.
Okay, I want to go back a little bit, because you say you're someone who was afraid of the dark and afraid of what was under your bed.
Yeah.
How did you reach the point where you said, I'm going to go on haunted tours?
Yeah, I know it's really funny, but maybe it's like, you know, I'm afraid of heights too, but a roller coaster is kind of fun because that adrenaline rush. And I think the thing about those fears is I know better, you know, in the rational time of daylight, I know, well, I believe, I hope there's no monsters in the shadows, but that fear is so powerful and so lingering. And I think there's some sort of adrenaline rush. And one of the things, you know, as a writer who makes up scary stories, but also shares them, is one of the great things about communicating that in the pages of a book is the person who's really scared has control. They can close the book. They can put it down. They can do something else. And similarly, as a writer, we can control the narrative. You know, the good guys can win. Good can triumph over evil. The monsters can be vanquished. And so I think I was drawn to this because it was a form of therapy, but it allowed me to have a little bit more control over those fears by guiding them and funneling them into words. And then maybe it's a misery loves company thing, but you know, if I can get other people scared with me, I'm not the only scared one in the room. I don't know. But I honestly think therapy has something to do with it somewhere in there.
Well, you're a far more rational person than I am. And the reason why I say that is you're afraid of heights. You're afraid of monsters. I'm afraid of water, and I will not get on a boat.
Really?
If my life depended on it.
Wow. Well, I mean, getting out of the water and into a boat probably would be a good reason to get into a boat.
Well, no. The idea of me being in the water, I'm not that close to water. And people often say, well, you know, you live on Montreal. It's an island. And I say, it's only an island when you're off it.
That's right.
So tell me some of the things that we can find in Haunted Hamilton.
So, you know, what's really funny is one of the first stories I wrote for that book goes back to Alexander Hamilton poem about the dark lady of the customs house. And not only did I learn about that through the poem, which was related to this very historic building that has it's transcended all the changes that Hamilton has had. Now, as a Canadian, you probably think of Hamilton as steel town. But when I was researching about the customs house, I learned that it had been a textile town well before it was a steel town. So it has gone through various personas and ways that it was known. But I also learned, interestingly enough, there is a line that says, "An appealer who saw her." And I was like, what the heck is that? Like, I've heard that term used in a place that gentlemen in quotes might frequent to see people take their clothes off. But I learned that the term peeler was a historic term that was used for police officers, and it was based on Sir Robert Peel. And that's where also the term Bobby comes from. So here's the cool thing about writing a ghost story book is you don't just learn about the cool ghosts of the city. You learn some of the history of the people, the places, but you even learn other cool things like Sir Robert Peel, like even the Canadian police who subscribe to much of his philosophy and writing still to this day. And that's where we get the term Bobby from for, you know, police officers in the UK. And that's where the term peeler, which is not in common use anymore, that's where it comes from. So again, you do a book of ghost stories and you're really touching upon a lot of different elements.
Doing the research for Haunted Hamilton, what was the thing that really caught your eye as far as paranormal activity was concerned?
I think one of them was this story about this tombstone. I called it the Tombstone Ghost, and it was a story I had read in the Hamilton Spectator as part of my research. And it was a really cool story that actually takes place over a decade of this haunting that happens in this apartment. Now, this woman wakes up in the middle of the night, and she wakes up and sees this ghost with these deep sunken eyes and this long straggly hair, just the upper half of her body. And it looks like she's screaming, and she's floating over her just a few feet above her on the bed. And then the woman screams, and then the ghost takes off to this one corner of the room. And that keeps happening. And it's so freaky that they end up bringing in paranormal specialists from the U.S. and exorcists and all kinds of like mediums and things like that. And they couldn't figure out what it was. And then 10 years later, they found a piece of tombstone in the building when they were collapsing it to build something else on that site. And they even followed the progression of the story of the gentleman who had shared the story. That's one of the stories that stuck with me because it wasn't just a one-off spooky ghostly thing. This was something that happened over time and is documented in you know, the daily newspaper as well. In relatively recent times, we're talking about the 70s and the 80s here when these stories took place. But I'm thinking that's one of the things that I found most fascinating is it's not just this moment in time and a weird thing that happened. It's the history that happens in that location over time.
You yourself believe in ghosts or the paranormal world?
I do. I believe, as Hamlet said, that there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in our philosophies, dear Horatio. So yes, I do.
Does it quell your fears when you do the research for books like this?
You know, sometimes I get scared. I was working on a book recently and it was late at night and my wife was in the other room reading and she was adjusting. We have the connected house. So she went to adjust the light in the bedroom and accidentally adjusted the light in the den. And I let out a scream because I was so into the chapter of the book I was writing. Yes, I get scared. But I think there's also a power to it as well. I think there's also something that really significant that allows me, I don't know, it allows me, like I said, that sort of control when I'm working on that. So yes, I get into it. Yes, I get scared, but that also tells me if I'm scared and I'm nervous and trepidatious as I'm writing a chapter or researching a chapter, that's probably going to translate to the reader having that same feeling. And why do we write and do storytelling? So people feel things. And so it's like, well, if I'm scared, I bet you other people might be too.
This is not your first foray into the paranormal world, so do you have other ideas and other titles and other regions that you want to check into?
Oh, for sure.
In your next several books?
You know what? I have a list of things I'm working on. One of them is haunted objects. One that I just turned into a Hamilton publisher just a couple weeks ago was The Ghost Stories of the Great Lakes. And oh my God, speaking of water, I mean, it was so fascinating. That was an absolute treat to work on. And I have other locations, bars and breweries and stuff like that. Like, I have an endless list of places I really want to write about.
Maybe you can answer this question in one of your future books. I mean, the fact that when a house is haunted, it's usually because someone died there. And my feeling is, shouldn't the most haunted places in the world be hospitals?
100%. And I did actually release a book I co-authored with Rhonda Parrish called Haunted Hospitals. And that's one of the conclusions we came to. This is a place where people come into and go out of the world. If there is any portal between our world and the other world, the afterlife, the before life, any of those spiritual areas, that a hospital is, you're right, probably one of the most haunted kinds of buildings we could have.
The current book is called Haunted Hamilton. It's out now. Mark, it's a pleasure to have you on the program once again to share the story with us. And by the way, don't wait 5 years to be on the program again.
Oh, thank you so much, Peter. I'll be sure to reach out to you just around the time that Ghost Stories of the Great Lakes is coming out.
Great. Looking forward to it, sir.
Thank you.
Mark Leslie, author of Haunted Hamilton. You can go to our website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0855, and you'll find the link to Mark's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
And now, Dad Joke Theater.
What's it called when a snowman throws a tantrum? A meltdown!
Join us again for another Stuff File program, Dad Joke Theater.
There's still more guests, more news, and an idiot of the day coming your way on the Stuff File program. Stay tuned. The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
It's garbage day. You're out enjoying your daily walk when you come upon two children rummaging through a recycling bin. One of them catches your eye. You look away. Are you empathetic or apathetic? Don't let homelessness assumptions get in the way of homelessness solutions. Go to CanadaCanDoIt.ca. Help the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness.
Here's a penny for your thoughts from the Stuff File program coming to you from Montreal, Canada, a country that doesn't have pennies.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Brian Blow, the international illusionist and comedy magician. Plus, Stuart Nullman is along with another edition of Book Banter. We also have a morning shower thought and, of course, an idiot of the day and much more in Stuff File News right here, right now. Here's an update to a story we shared a couple of years ago. Arkansas couple, 22-year-old Darian Urban and 21-year-old Shailene Ellers, learned their different fates when they were sentenced after trying to sell their baby for a six-pack of beer to a man at a campground. Urban pleaded guilty to one count of attempted accepting compensation for adoption during a hearing on December 22nd. In exchange for his guilty plea, prosecutors dropped one count of endangering the welfare of a minor. Meanwhile, Benton County Circuit Judge Brad Caron accepted the plea agreement and sentenced Urban to serve 3 years in the Arkansas Department of Corrections with an additional 3-year suspended sentence. Meanwhile, Ellers pleaded guilty to the same two counts. Following her plea, the judge ordered for Ellers to be placed on state-supervised probation for 6 years. The sentencing means that Ellers could end up with no criminal record if she completes the probation without issue. Urban may have received a more severe punishment due to his prior legal trouble in Arkansas. Back in June of 2023, he pleaded guilty to two counts of theft by receiving stolen goods that were valued between $1,000 and $5,000. He was placed on probation, and he violated the terms when he tried to sell his child. The couple attempted to sell their baby in September of 2024, and they even drew up a contract for the deal.
Once the campground owner learned about the attempted transaction, he called 911, and the baby boy, who allegedly showed signs of neglect, was taken to a hospital. Neither Urban nor Ehlers are allowed to contact their son as part of their plea agreements. You know, after trying to sell their baby for beer and looking at their mugshots, that kid is going to grow up fearing what will befall him in life just based on his gene pool. Yeah. In Martin County, Florida, 63-year-old Stephen Pavlik, a Salvation Army bell ringer, has been arrested for attempting to impale a Publix grocery store manager with his kettle tripod. Pavlik was hired to collect donations during the holiday season, but instead created a disturbance outside the store. Witnesses say he was intoxicated while on duty, confronting and disturbing customers who passed by. The situation escalated when the Publix manager approached Pavlik to address his behavior. In a violent outburst, Pavlik attempted to assault and impale the manager with a donation kettle tripod, fortunately missing his target and not causing injury. After fleeing the scene, deputies later found Pavlik at his residence. He was taken into custody without further incident and subsequently transported to the Martin County Jail. I guess his bell-ringing days are over. I also think the Salvation Army has to work a little harder in checking the background of their volunteers. Otherwise,
it's a missed donation opportunity for the Salvation Army. Just 2 hours of your time as a volunteer bell ringer this holiday season will help us provide more than food and shelter all year.
And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a late-night drive-through Lawrence County turned into multiple charges after wildlife officers stopped a vehicle they say was involved in illegal deer hunting. According to the Georgia Department of Natural Resources, officers pulled a vehicle over on December 13th after seeing a passenger repeatedly shine a light across agricultural fields from the roadway. During the stop, officers reported smelling alcohol coming from the vehicle and found several open containers inside. Officers also discovered multiple weapons, including rifles, pistols, and a shotgun. The driver was screened and arrested on a DUI charge. Both the driver and passenger now face charges for hunting deer at night, hunting from a public road, hunting from a motor vehicle, and having open containers of alcohol in the car. Boy, if they had illegal cigarettes, that would cover all of the agency of alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. And by the way, I've always thought that that was a weird grouping. Anyway, also, drinking and hunting or fishing is not a good idea, and it might get you the attention of Jeff Foxworthy.
If you've ever been too drunk to fish, you might be a redneck.
And let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Back in August of last year, we had Brian Glow on the show. He's a successful international illusionist and comedy magician. Well, back on that show, we spent most of the time talking about the fact that he is also an anti-bullying and suicide awareness advocate who shares his message with youths. We spent so much time that we didn't get any time to talk about his actual career. So we're doing that now. Brian joins us from Winnipeg via Riverside.com. Brian, nice to have you back.
Thanks, Peter. Great to be here.
One of the things that I find rather interesting, awe-inspiring, is the fact that as a performer, you have traveled to 45 countries. There are diplomats who haven't been to 45 countries.
Well, 45 is what I remember, and that keeps coming up as we continue to tour. And I have not stopped, and after 60 years of doing magic, I see no end to it.
What was the first country you went to, and what was the first, shall we say,
exotic place that you said, oh, I've really made it?
So the very first place I started was outside of Canada was the United States, obviously, because we're neighbors. But I started my touring career internationally quite young. In 1977, I had the opportunity to perform for 4.5 months in Kenya, Africa, in a casino in Nairobi. And that was pure happenstance by meeting an agent in Saskatoon who said, oh, I'm going to Africa because my father's becoming the dean of